Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello, everyone. It's Friday, which means it's Inside EV's podcast day. Hooray! As usual, we have three incredible experts to talk you through the week. I'm your host, Alex Goy. I will be asking these people questions and to educate me and you. But let's kick off with Lacey, Misco Electric. How you doing?
Doing great.
Good. We like that. You've had the world's busiest week. How you're awake is beyond me.
Yes. A lot of makeup to cover those under eye bags. Probably see, not all glasses. Covered.
glasses hide a multitude of sins and hangovers. We also have Hazel Southwell. How's your week been, Hazel?
I've spent a lot of the last 24 hours struggling for electricity because quite a big storm hit the UK, and it turns out not all areas of my house are waterproof. So that was good. That was exciting.
Okay, so we need to invest in some Inside EVs, brollies for your house, or buckets for your house. We can do that. In fact, the person who can facilitate it is the boss man himself, Patrick George. Hello, buddy.
Hello, everyone. And Hazel, yes, send me an invoice for whatever buckets or brollies you need. Thank you for showing up to this podcast despite flooding. That's pretty heroic stuff. So, yeah. Sorry, dude.
That is commitment. And Patrick, you've also had... It is commitment. Patrick, you have also had the world's busiest week. The website is covered in your bylines. Are your fingers down to nubs yet?
No, it's been... When I came back to editor-in-chiefing, I tried to make it a priority to keep writing as much as I can, because I did a lot of that over the last year, and it makes me really happy. So it's been fun and busy this week. We've had a lot of cool stories on the site and a lot to discuss. I mean, I was telling the crew here, like, I think moving forward to this podcast, we may stop delineating between news and Tesla news. I don't know what that looks like yet. Open to suggestions from listeners.
I'm guessing it looks like news.
It probably just looks like news. Having said that, a lot of our news is Tesla news this week because they had their Q3. So we're gonna dive into that. It's gonna be great.
Oh yes. Well, without further ado, let's move on to the non-Tesla, but with a little bit of Tesla, EV News. EV News. Right, leading our lineup this week, a post that did super well on the site. It is how to preserve your battery. A man on the internet has managed to keep 95% of his battery's capacity after 135,000 miles using some cheeky tips. And basically being a bit clever. So what do we make of that? I mean, do we all agree with it? Do we get what do you all expect?
I think this is like, so this is the kind of thing that, because EVs for like wide adoption are still kind of a lot of what people are talking about is kind of like reviews of chargers, is stuff like how fast can you get something to charge, like all of these things, whereas actually the kind of basic vehicle maintenance that you can pick up quite a lot of knowledge about on combustion cars is sort of lacking as a general topic, because the technology is so new, or is so new as a widely adopted form of road transport, it's something where the questions people have are initially kind of like, well, how do I buy this? How do I make it work for me on a basic level? And stuff like these kind of tips and tricks where it's like, well, here's how you look after it really well and make it work for you really, really well, are things that, you know, they're sort of a next stage of stuff. So I think it's very positive to see this sort of thing. I also think, like, I don't think there's any reason to question that any of this is untrue, because actually his advice seems generally quite sound and quite sensible. It's all things like, you know, fast charging does degrade your battery faster. And you know, charging only when you need to, and managing the battery and things like that are all things that we kind of all know are things that you should do with any battery, but especially a car, or batteries of this size. But where the temptation, because the use case of cars is not to do that, because it's not something that we're kind of so trained into or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. I thought this was an interesting piece. I thought it was an interesting video, and yeah, I think it's good to see these things emerging with what's all like pragmatic advice that you can do. This isn't like, I managed to extend the range of my battery by buying some fabulously expensive stuff and, you know, dipping it in liquid nitrogen every night or like whatever, you know.
I use only solid gold cables, and that does the thing. Yes, yeah, so it's a YouTuber, Andy Sly. He's kept all this capacity after 135,000 miles by only using a level one or level two charger, and putting a hard limit on how much his battery can charge to 80%. Now, Lacey, you have a small fleet of EVs, ever growing. Is this what you do? Would you recommend it? What's your take from this?
Yeah, I think Andy's spot on with the fact that you want to ensure that you're charging at a daily limit of 80% regularly, if you don't have to go up to 100%. And this is really applicable to those like larger batteries. I saw someone in the comments before when I hopped in on the live stream on YouTube that said, I have a Volvo plug-in hybrid and, you know, do I have to worry about charging to 100% every day? And really in that use case, you're not using DC fast charging for that vehicle. Your power that's allowed to come in on that vehicle is rather slow. So in that case, you can charge to 100, and I don't think you're going to really see any portion of degradation that's going to be of concern. But I think another point to bring up here is that degradation is normal in electric vehicles, and Tesla is definitely a leader in this space on making sure that the longevity is there and the health of the batteries remains. But I think people need to be aware when they adopt an EV, like to Hazel's point, a lot of people just don't know these basic fundamental things. Like, even if they can, people ask me like, can I plug in my cell phone and charge it? You know, is that going to like use up so much energy that I'm decreasing my range? And it's like, it's so minuscule, you know, those little things. We forget that someone moving into an EV, they don't really understand that. And I think this degradation conversation is important because, you know, generally speaking, maybe you'll see in the first year a 5% degradation, and then the year after maybe 2%, then 1% the next year. But then it kind of like plateaus out for the most part. It's very slow. And I don't think a lot of people get that. But if you want to preserve that health and prolong the health of your battery, you kind of need to go along the lines of don't DC fast charge quite a bit. Although Recurrent, a few weeks ago, we talked about they have shown even cars that have been DC fast charging, especially Tesla models, haven't been degrading too hard. I can speak for my personal experience. I actually just sold my Model Y because I finally took delivery of my Rivian R1T, as most of you know, but I have the Model S still. So that's a 2016. And when initially it was first released, it had 300 miles of range, and now I'm getting about 270 when I fully charge. So still performs pretty well, but that one actually is a road tripper. So most of the miles on that, it's almost 100,000 miles. Those are road trip miles for the majority of them. So it's, you know, treat it good, and you'll get long health. But even in my case with Tesla vehicles, they do seem to hold up pretty well over time.
Patrick, what are your thoughts, boss?
Yeah, I wanted to elaborate on something that Hazel and Lazy both said, which is that, like, you know, we have seen Tesla become like a leader in maintaining battery health over time. You know, part of that story we did before we went into this video you know, talks about some data from Recurrent Audio, or I'm sorry, Recurrent Auto, which is one of the more interesting battery data startups out there. And I've talked to them before. They do really excellent work. And, you know, they said that, you know, they did a survey in August of about 6,300 Model 3s in the United States, showed on average after 5 years, they still have about 90% capacity on their batteries, which is really impressive. So like this company, I think that they're, you know, we see time and time again, they're really getting battery science down in a way that's going to, I think, you know, have some longevity if you take care of them right. I think there might be some people out there that would sort of balk at the idea of like always only charging to 80%. Like, well, I didn't get 100% of what I paid for, but it's just, it is a paradigm shift. Like, you know, not, you know, just like revving your engine, you know, sitting there all day. Like, there are things that you should do to maintain a gasoline car properly.
Yeah, there are comparisons between the two. Don't rev the knackers off it. When it's new, run it in properly. When it hits, you know, big miles, like going to the moon, some of the horses may have left the stable or even died in there. That's just, it's a thing that, like, engines degrade just as much. You lose economy, you lose X, Y, Z, and you can minimize that damage by taking care of it. And this is... I think it's simply because this is still, for a lot of people, a brave new world and new technology. And there isn't that kind of wisdom that's been around for so long. You know, your dad isn't saying, well, only charge up to 80%, then you'll preserve the battery life. Your dad was saying, well...
Like my dad always said, only charge your Tesla 80%, son. And tell your mother 5 more minutes on the grill. Like, that hasn't happened yet, but maybe someday.
And I think... a lot of this stuff as well is like, because actually, I don't know how many of us, and maybe this is a thing in the US, I know that kind of like gas is cheaper generally there and sold in bigger volumes, but like, I don't think I've ever filled my car. Like, I don't think I've ever filled it up to the top.
Yeah.
I do that far too often, because when it gets to 50%, I start getting like, oh no, I'm going to run out of petrol, even though I'm going 2 minutes away.
I'm more of a like, oh, I put like £7 of petrol in, that'll do.
So battery maintenance and looking after your battery properly is, it turns out, a good thing. Less of a good thing, GM has, it's doing some delays at its Orion assembly plant in Michigan. Now, currently the factory makes the Bolt EV and EUV, and the plant was set for retooling to handle the Ultium-based pickups that were going to be imminent, but now, it was going to be the first quarter of 2025, but now they've delayed it until late 2025. The excuse seems to be demand. Michiganites, what do we think?
No, I think that they got themselves in a situation where they are like, oh my God, we are pouring so much money into these products and we're losing our bottoms on them because we have 200 kilowatt hour battery packs that can produce X amount of range and we need to get these costs down so we're not using as many batteries to be able to get the range that we want. I think that is like the main story here, is that they are going back and saying we need to re-engineer because we cannot, like, if we need to get battery volume up, we can't be just shoving a ton in each one of these products. We need to get the volume of the vehicles up so that we can make more money.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the GM EV lineup is really ambitious, but at this point in, like, you know, toward the end of 2023, it's like largely fan fiction that they're writing. All of those cars have had delays and production problems and problems with the battery and problems with software. Like that this promised lineup just keeps getting punted further and further back because it's proving really hard to make these things, harder than I think all these so-called legacy automakers thought. And like, this is a bummer news, because you think that now, by the time this allegedly comes out, the Lightning will have been on the market 3 years, about 3 years. So it's got a hell of a head start here. And you know, it's funny, you could joke about this, but like, I don't know which is going to really come out like in force first, like this or like the Tesla Cybertruck. You know, it's really a toss-up, and for very different reasons too. You know,
there's also a massive bummer here, which is that There's going to be a plant that could have been churning out the successful EV that GM have made, the Bolt, and it could have carried on cranking out Bolts, which people love and which there is a significant market for 2 years, and instead it's going to sit there doing nothing and not delivering any Silverados. Like, that's a, even in a time of massive logistical change for OEMs, that's just a, beyond a cell phone. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
What I find fascinating about this is that we've spent, and, you know, I myself am quite guilty of this, I've spent a long time kind of pointing at Tesla and its Cybertruck silliness and promising much and then delivering not anything for years. And I think a lot of the auto industry, a lot of journalists have done the same. And now something similar-ish is happening, because we keep going, oh, well, we need to talk to our legacy automakers when they figure this out.
Yeah.
They'll get it. And all of a sudden, you know, GM, with its seemingly infinite money and power and hold over America, and it can't do it either.
Well, this is also devastating because, to me, we need every brand to come out with all these different models that can provide an electric option, because we have loyalists of brands. So, like, someone that is interested in a GM product, a pickup truck in this case, you know, they're not going to buy an F-150 Lightning because they want to wait because they love GM or whatnot. So it also is just, you know, a shame on that regard, because people do want to go electric, but they also want to stick with the brand that they love.
I mean, brand loyalty is one thing, but imagine if they get to things like, well, this car is now knackered and I need something else, or I want to sell up, or my lease is over, where do they go?
I don't know. Meanwhile, you know, you look at this from like an emissions perspective, you know, they said they're working on a new V8 engine for their Suburbans and Tahoes and other, and the gas trucks, which is what like pays the bills for GM. Like, they're a truck company that makes other kinds of cars as like a side hustle, you know, as if for fun. And it's, I don't know, it's like, how fatalistic, how dark do you want to get here? Because, like, I think that there very much is a reality where, like, General Motors doesn't figure out batteries. Like, one day it becomes like AM General or something. Like, it's just a maker of gasoline trucks, and it's far smaller than it is now. It maybe appeals to, like, you know, certain parts of the country or certain commercial clients only. Like, they just become a full on a truck company. Like, well, we tried the battery thing, we couldn't get it to work. This is going to be more profitable, be smaller, but you know, we can deal. I hope that's not the case.
Which is crazy when you think about money and all of the actually pragmatic JV steps that they took with Ultium, and the huge expanse of like what the products of Ultium are, because it's not just car batteries, it's like local grid solutions, it's a V2G, it's virtual power plants. It's home fittings and stuff. And so, I mean, I don't know whether the scale of that is one of the factors in this. And if they just said, hey, let's just churn out some car batteries, then there'd be Silverados like whipping out of the factory. But to me, it feels like they've done sort of like 2/3 of the work to make this actually work, and then kind of, and maybe it is the thing of they're still kind of developing V8s as well, and it's like, well, you probably have to jump one way or the other. You can't stand there like wobbling between two pontoons with it and like seeing which one tips you into the water first. But I think it just seems very messy for a company of this scale, especially to have like 2 years of downtime in a factory. That's
a lot of money that's not becoming money. It's just, it's
not a scale. And then those 200
kilowatt, sorry, Patrick.
Oh, no, I'm saying it's like a lot of scale you can't achieve. And it's like, okay, deliveries begin late 25. So we're talking like volume by 26, really know what you're doing by 27. It's usually how this has kind of gone for all the other OEMs. Like, this is a long time to wait for this, and it's troubling, and it's disappointing in a lot of ways, you know.
And how much more of this before they get back in their private jets and go to Washington and ask for money again, like 2010 or whenever it was.
I'm not sure this country has the stomach for it to do that ever again. I mean, like, there's people that are still bitter about that. Like, I mean, they're far away from that. Like, this is, let's be clear, this is a very profitable company. It does extremely well, but it's like, I think it's bet on the future is proving more difficult than it thought. And I guess the only other thing I'd add too is, like, you know, back to all the gas trucks they're going to make for the next decade plus, like, I wish those were hybrids, because, like, that's something they could do right now to save gas, to take emissions out of the air right now. But, like, they're just going to be, no, we're the 6.2 liter V8 company, and that's what's going to pay the bills till, you know, for decades. And you can just kind of, that's the plan. So it's
like some survivalist holdout in a forest being like, I only eat canned food, none of this vegan stuff, I shoot and kill my own things. Anyway, GM doing a GM. Patrick, you've had, as part of your incredibly busy week, you've been chatting with ChargePoint CEO, because of course Tesla's North American charging standard is just going everywhere and doing all the things. More and more manufacturers are taking it up. It's becoming the thing. But so your interview with their CEO, he says, bring it on, Pasquale Romano. So tell us what you learned.
I think because you're European, you have an easier time pronouncing Pasquale than I did. I struggle. I'm from Texas public schools. Like, I can barely read, honestly.
Patrick George there, everyone.
Yeah, just quasi literate, exactly. I had a very interesting chat with Pasquale. You know, I'll be candid. Like, you know, I think we've all had bad experiences with ChargePoint or disappointing ones. I don't know an EV driver or a journalist who drives these things a lot who hasn't had that experience, but, like, they're an interesting company because, like, they were super early adopter at this in this world. Like Pasquale has been there since 2011, and, like, now, like EVs, like, this stuff is all going mainstream. And so, you know, there was kind of a moment where, when everything in the EV world started going towards Tesla's plug in America instead of CCS, you know, like Ford started doing that. Now, like, I think 16 or 17 other automakers have said they're going to use the Tesla plug. You know, the question was, like, well, what does this mean for the charging companies? Like, are they just going to go out of business? Are they going to adapt? And, you know, Pasquale is like, yeah, we can make NACS Tesla plugs very easily. He says, and I quote, it's a freaking piece of plastic. And their solution is going to be to have basically two plugs at each station, ideally, you know, like, so you don't have to dedicate a parking space to a certain type of plug. So it's like, oh, I can only park here if I have a CCS car, or I can only park there if I have a NACS car. Like, they want you to be able to park anywhere you see ChargePoint and throw that on. And, like, you know, they're going to be making CCS plugs for a long time because there's so many EVs in America that are going to run on that for a while. That's obviously the standard in Europe, too. You know, they're working on fixing their uptime problems they've had. You know, they're an interesting company because, you know, they're not an electricity provider. They sell equipment to property owners, to businesses, and, you know, that's who they consider the customer. And it's like, well, you know, we know the end user is drivers and car drivers, but, like, they're focused on that, you know, that sort of commercial user, the business, the mall or whatever that's going to put these in. I think it seems like a positive move that keeps them relevant. But he's like, yeah, he's like super relaxed about this. He's like, this the NACS move in America, it should have happened a long time ago. Regulators in America should have stepped in a long time ago, like the EU did. And, you know, just like declared what format we're all going to use. And, you know, I think that just... forgive me for saying this, but, like, it's almost like the market has decided at this point. Like, it's like, we're definitely going towards NACS, and it's like, you can adapt to that, or you could probably close it up and go home. I think they want to do the first one.
That figures. I mean, it would be somewhat foolish if every charge provider went, oh, we don't know what's going on, so we're just going to not do the thing and doggedly stick it out. It makes no sense. It's Apple finally moving to USB-C.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's like, oh,
no, you talk.
No, it's what he likened it to. It was like Apple finally going to USB-C, and we can all you know, consign our lightning ports to some landfill in China, or, like, you know, iceberg of trash that floats in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere. But, like, this plug universality needs to happen, you know.
I love that the solution for NACS is a much simpler, more elegant solution. It's not as bulky, it's easier to plug in, as most of us know, but that doesn't solve the reliability issue. So that's just like, although I like this news, this is great. I actually am kind of surprised that ChargePoint hasn't tried to make this shift earlier. I know EVgo technically didn't have like a seamless integration of the Tesla connector because it was like an adapter that was put on, but they've been trying to have Tesla customers as a customer themselves by providing this kind of adapter on their charging stations for a long time. And I'm kind of just surprised that ChargePoint didn't try to solve that problem earlier than they did, because they are one of the largest charging providers. But like you said, Patrick, their business model is different from everyone else. They're not selling the electricity. They're selling the unit, and then they're relying on the company to pay basically a subscription fee to, you know, have the software management and stuff like that. So that's how they make money in comparison to the other networks. Again, most of their stuff is level two. I like the fact that they are saying that they have a really easy retrofit process for the people who have home stations that want to switch out. Maybe they did buy a Tesla because it's a good unit and they should have the ability to swap those out pretty easily. It takes like no time apparently, and it's relatively affordable. I think they were saying like maybe $200. So I think that is great news. I wish they would did a little bit sooner, but yeah, that's just me.
I'm going to make a really elderly comparison, or like, I say elderly probably, but I think the NACS thing is really like Blu-ray versus whatever the thing that wasn't Blu-ray.
HD DVD.
That's it. Xbox versus PlayStation. This is how over it was. Yeah, and it's because Blu-ray came in PlayStations, mm-hmm. and like everyone got a PlayStation and was like, this is great. And so like, because Xbox lost that race, and also it wasn't really integrated and you had to buy an extra bit, and it didn't by default come in it, and like whatever, and that was all a bit messy, and so HD DVD just got completely flattened, mm-hmm. By having this seamless integration of Blu-ray into PlayStations, which I feel is kind of sort of what's happened with NACS, because the Tesla supercharger network is so good that other charging networks saying, hey, we're going to have NACS, we're going to, you know, try and do these things. People are like, oh, that is going to maybe be as good as the supercharger network. And it's like, well, you can probably get away with that for like 2-3 months before everyone realizes all your chargers are busted and like no one's really maintaining them and whatever.
Yeah. That we like that. So it's good news. And Mr. ChargePoint is Pasquale. Is doing a sensible.
It is. Just Hazel, also, like you brought up the Blu-ray HDTV thing. I wrote a story this summer and I compared this to VHS and Betamax, and my editor was like, that might go over the heads of all of our younger readers, so let's lose that. And that was the hardest I've ever been owned in my life. Like, I was like, I have to go take a nap while my bones crumble to dust now. Thanks.
For those of you who aren't familiar with VHS versus Betamax, it was a battle in the 80s, yeah. Between the VHS cassette tape and the Betamax tape. Betamax did offer superior clarity, blah, 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 but VHS was cheaper and everyone had one. But yeah, we're old. Sorry.
It might make a comeback. The Inside EVs podcast, brought to you by Betamax.
you know, there's someone out there with a massive CRT TV. CRT is cathode ray tube. It's why your grandparents call it the tube.
I know several of these people.
It's why YouTube gets its name. Yeah, massive CRT with the stack of Betamax movies that they just love watching. Anyway, electric cars. News from Oirope, where Hazel and I are. We had some... There's a new car coming. We're a continuation of a lineage. Citroën C3 is back again. Way back in the day, it was Citroën's teeny tiny, very cool little hatchback. It was cheap. It was cheerful. You could have it with petrol or diesel. It was a sort of bubble car to start with, and then it got a bit cubey. And the latest version was unveiled on the 17th of October. Now... Citroën, the next generation C3, so says the story I'm reading, is set to rival the Vauxhall Corsa and the Peugeot 208 in the small hatchback market. Bear in mind, they're owned by the same company. So, you know, that'll be fun. But it's unsurprisingly been reinvented as a sort of mini SUV thing. It's a bit taller, 10 centimeter higher driving position. It's squarer. It debuts Citroën's new kind of heritagey, vintagey logo. It's got changeable color clips, so you can change the look of your car depending on your mood. I guarantee like four people will do it. And then everyone else who does it will be the diehard Citroën people, have a stack of them in their garage, sell them to each other at Auto Jumbles and get very excited in about 120 years. The cool stuff, the very cool stuff, is it's got a 44 kilowatt hour battery, about 111 horsepower, 0-62, less cool, takes 11 seconds, and its top speed is 84 miles an hour. It doesn't sound mega quick, but out of that 44 kilowatt hour battery, it'll do 199 miles. On a 100 kilowatt charger, it'll do 20 to 80% in about 26 minutes, 80% to preserve the battery, obviously. There will be a smaller battery that'll do 120 miles of range. But the very, very cool thing is, that though prices aren't 100% confirmed, it's set to be less than £23,000. So depending on the exchange rate and how awful our country's being, it will either be $20,000 or $35,000, depending on the week. Just pick a number between there. Either way, it's a small, cheap, SUV-ish city car that appears to be able to go for thousands of miles, which is good, right?
There's a lot to like here. The 44 kilowatt hour battery, like, I know this is a thing that particularly, like, Lacey and me go on about, like, battery packs have to shrink. And so I think that's really positive. There's a lot to like about the price. The thing, and I do think, you know, Citroën is a non-premium brand. They do not need to be competing with like e-trons or
they have DS for that. That's DS's job.
Yes, and DS releases a car every 60 years or something. And they're very nice and you like to look at them.
I saw one the
currently
other day.
Electrogenic are doing DS's cars effectively, but this car, so in on paper I like all the numbers apart from I don't understand why it's that little bit higher, other than because other cars are now so big that you sort of have to raise a little car, which you're losing a bit of efficiency when you're doing that. And also, I'm sort of torn between it's got a bit of Jimny DNA somewhere in there.
There is no shame in looking like a Jimny.
No, because I love a Jimny.
In highlighter yellow, and it made my day.
I love Jimnys. There's a bunch around me. I want one. They're great. But I don't think I want a Citroën C3 to look like a Jimny. I think I want it to look like a Citroën C3.
Fair. Well, bear in mind that the last generation C3 was a little bit more sit up and beg uprighty, but this has kind of taken it to a next step. I haven't seen it in the metal, so I can't be like, oh, it's massive or oh, it's tiny. But
because these are renders, aren't they?
No, these are proper pics. The unveil happened in Paris, I think. I saw a bunch of chums going. So it's a real thing. That's a real product that does a move and everything.
Just with painfully generic shop.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just a clueless American. Like this car has no bearing on my life at all, besides like I might rent it if I'm ever like on vacation in France or something. But like I miss when Citroëns were weird. Like this is a fine little car, great little battery pack. It looks very practical, but it could stand to be like a billion times weirder. Like it should have a steering wheel with no spokes at all. And like bench seats up front that face both ways. Like it should have been designed by someone who's never been to our planet before. Like those are the best Citroëns. I miss when they were doing like crazy stuff, and you just don't really see that in the Stellantis era of that company. You know,
on that point, I think that I think it's a bit of Stellantis, but I also think when in the case of C3 in that segment, and bear in mind it's up against the very generic Vauxhall Corsa and the looks like a Peugeot and very good in liquid yellow 208, it kind of needs to have that I'm a normal blob edge, whereas because if it was too far out, even for 23 grand, if it looked like sort of the crayon vomit of a 5-year-old who'd just been to Paris and gone, wow, I like that, it would put off the target buyers, who are going to be probably a little bit older, probably city dwellers exclusively. So it can't look too weird, because your mum might go, ugh, that's horrid.
I think it's cute. It kind of does remind me a little bit of like Renegade vibes, but it's smaller. What else are they building on this platform? Does anyone
know? I think it's same platform as 2.8 and Corsa. I'll have a deeper look, but it's an car, but it's a cool an car. The range works for me. The performance, a lot of people are going to be very fed up with that, and they're going to be like, well, you know, how dare it do only 84 miles an hour? But you'll get arrested if you do 84 miles an hour.
I was going to say, no, only a speed that you would only be allowed to do on a track.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just y'all drive your cars differently than we do. Like, Europeans drive cars for small errands in the city, and we, you know, drag race our Ram TRXs at 150 miles an hour on the freeway until you know, the sheriff orders a helicopter in the air and we're on the evening news. Like, that's how we drive in America, and, you know, we like it. I will point out very quickly, this delightful little car, it's going to stand to be a little more interesting to look at, I think, has a 44 kilowatt hour battery. So those GM trucks we were just talking about, they're struggling to make, the battery pack on that is 5 times the size of that little Citroen city car. Like, that's America, everybody.
That's perspective.
We can't build these cars. There isn't enough demand for a 200 kilowatt hour battery. Citroen's like, yeah, we're just going to fire these things out of the factory all over France. All over, there'll be a decent group of them probably powering around London. They'll be all over Spain. Like, it's the kind of thing that works here. I hope it's still the European problem is we're very rich in tiny weird cars, but we're very poor in driveways with chargers and space for cars, because it's a corner of the world that wasn't built around the automobile. We didn't invent it and then build cities around roads. Instead, we built cities and then roads just kind of had to fit in, which means, you know, Hazel and I, we live in apartments. If there was a cheap charger over the road, fine, I'd do that. But it's still that, is it workable for a normal?
I actually do have a cheap charger right across the road from me, to be fair.
You lucky Dalek. Anyway, Citroen C3s. We like the. Oh, well, I like those. I think it's great. I'm looking forward to having a go in one at some point, because I think it's. What is it people always say about European hatchbacks? It's quirky and fun, a little bit like the cousin or the little brother of your best friend who you don't really like, but you have to say something nice about anyway.
We're just being polite.
Yeah, we're just being polite. I think it's cool. But with normal news out of the way, it's time to move on to the not normal news. It's time. But Tesla news.
Tesla news.
Oh, Tesla, Tesla, Tesla. It's having a bit of a week. The Q3 earnings report is in. And, well, revenue is up, but it's down on Q2. But it still made $23 billion. That's quite a lot of dollars. What do we think, team? How is Tesla doing?
Eek. That was not a good earnings call.
Oh. Yeah, so can you talk us through this? Because all of the chatter on the internet is out. There are a couple of stories we're going to talk about throughout this segment about the earnings call, and some things were said. But why specifically Eek? Because to the layman, $23 billion sounds like a lot of money, and that's good, but it's not good enough.
I'm very concerned about Cybertruck now. Like, I think they're getting themselves into a situation that's worse than what the Model X was, where everyone at Tesla was telling Elon, like, please don't do this. This is very complicated. This is going to be a loser as far as, like, the money that we're making on this. And, you know, I think the complexity of Cybertruck is going to be, just by the way he's saying this, as, like, we dug our own grave. If he's saying that, to me, that's like, oh my God, yikes. Like, yeah. I'm very nervous to see what's going to happen when it gets in rolling into production. And I'm actually, from what he said, I'm almost kind of surprised that November 30th is the delivery date that they announced that they're going to do the event. Because I know it's been delayed, but if he's still like prepping people for this to be kind of a nightmare, like, oh, I don't know. It makes me very nervous. And I'm not a stockholder or anything like that. I really want them to succeed. And I think this is such a game-changing product, but people have been waiting for so long.
When the man who's been pimping out how brilliant his company is for so long and the Cybertruck has been so mooted into this incredible product, when he says, I want to temper expectations, it's a great product, but financially it will take a year to 18 months before it's a significant positive cash flow contributor. I wish there was some way to be different, but that's just my best guess. I mean, one guess, incredible. We dug our own grave with the Cybertruck. I mean, I know, as I said earlier, I've been one of those people that's been going, it'll never be released. This is silly. Oh, isn't Tesla doing a bad? But when he, the man who has pushed so hard for this thing, has gone, I may have made a very, very expensive boo-boo, so please be nice on his earnings call, that becomes,
Yeah, this was, I listened to that call and it was like, we definitely got like dark Elon a little bit, or like, you know, drives around alone at night listening to the national Elon, like, you know. I think somebody on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it now, like said, like, he sounds like he needed a nap, and he probably does, but like, it was, you know, the quarterly results down a bit. It's not, nothing to really be concerned about. It's like, you know, revenue down a bit, production down a bit. They warned of factory downtime. Like, they knew this was going to happen. It was like, whatever. But to Lacey's point, it was like it was a weird vibe on the Cybertruck. And like, you don't get like, you know, like the hype master of the auto industry being like, temper expectations, and like, we dug our own grave. And it's wild, because like, it reminds me a little bit of like the production hell era of Model 3, where they were saying stuff kind of like this. But like, looking back, like, that was something they had to do, because they like reinvented how production works and kind of like set a template that everybody's trying to follow. This, the Cybertruck, kind of feels like an unforced error. Like, you did not have to make this car. You didn't have to do it this way. Just like the Falcon Doors, the Model X. Like, none of this needed to happen. They could have come out with a truck, maybe even on like the Model S or a platform, SX platform, that's like, you know, Honda Ridgeline style with like conventional sheet metal. That would have killed it. I mean, like, if they had been like, yeah, this will be out like next week, and GM's like, we'll get our EV trucks on the road, you know, sometime before the decade's out, maybe. Like, that would have been a game changer. But this, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go for them. I think it may end up being like a halo car, like a high volume. I'm sorry, like high price, low volume halo car, rather than the F-150 killer that everyone thinks it is.
I mean, he's saying that they'll be pumping out, or there'll be a quarter of a million by 2025, which is still a lot of vehicles. The thing that I mean, yeah, people saying, oh, we dug our own grave, etc. But it's all the features and the stuff that over the years has very much become ingrained with the super hardcore Tesla fans. There's one that stuck with me. I forget the guy's name, probably for the best. But he was saying, oh yeah, but I'll be driving along and I'll be perfectly safe in my car because it's bulletproof and it's got this. And it seems part of it is, you know, you've got someone saying, we're going to build all this cool stuff. It's bulletproof. And it's that. And then all these people are somehow afraid that they're going to get shot while they're driving down the street in this, or pelted with rocks. I mean, I don't, because he said all of it, it now has to happen.
I think they're just going to come out with something that's not those things, and maybe in the future somehow bring that to market if they can, but I don't think it's viable at this stage. Like, as far as I understand, it's not going to be an exoskeleton at this stage. Like, there are a lot of things that it's not going to be that was promised. And so, like, some people are going to be disappointed. I think most of the issue, like, obviously software is good for Tesla. Like, they're not going to have any issue with that, I don't think. it's the stainless steel in this manufacturing process that's going to just, I think, for years going to just plague them with issues having to go into service. And they already don't have, like, their service at top notch right now to prepare for this kind of stuff.
No, yeah, 100%. And it's like, I'm comparing this to, like, what we heard from, like, Kia last week, you know, which of the so-called legacy OEMs, like, I think Hyundai Group is actually doing a really solid job on production, batteries, all this stuff. Like, they're close to Tesla in a lot of ways. And it's, they're like, here's three new crossovers and a crazy sedan that we're definitely coming out with. And then it's like, yeah, then Tesla has like this sheet metal boondoggle. I'm sorry, a stainless steel boondoggle thing. It's like, was this where they should have put their resources right now? Like, I'm not convinced I don't think they should have, honestly.
No, you
know, this is where it should go right now.
It's the comparisons to DeLorean, they're just spread out over different years. Oh, I want doors that go up because they're cool. Oh, I want a car made of stainless steel. I mean, last week we were talking about the pictures, or they were circulating around the internet of a DeLorean parked next to a Cybertruck, a prototype Cybertruck, and you see the front where the frunk is. And if you just zoomed in a little bit on those pictures, the thing was covered in fingerprints already. I mean, that's people are going to be, that you're going to know when someone sat on your car, you're going to know when someone's been near it or looked at it funny because there'll be a fingerprint on it. It's a notoriously difficult metal to work with. The shapes they're doing, you know, if you speak to car designers, you're saying, like, how are they going to do it? Like, they want all of this micron accuracy. And they're saying, well, you can't for anything short of lots and lots and lots and lots of money. So it'll be very interesting. What was that rule with new cars? You never buy one at the beginning of its run because no one knows how to build them, and never buy one at the end of the run because they don't care about it and all the tools are knackered. So I wonder whether it's going to be a very big learning process. And I do wonder whether with the Tesla faithful, the people have been waiting, what, how long now? 6 years, 5 years for these vehicles? If what they get isn't up to snuff, because if you irritate and if you don't serve the people that have been holding the torch for you for so long, what happens to your company? What happens to your stock with them?
Especially at this stage when financing is really tough in our country because things are very expensive. Like, I think that's the main problem as to why we see a lot of these people saying that EV demand is slowing, but I think it's more of a financing issue. And if the price isn't right with Cybertruck, they're going to have the same concerns. Like, as big as the demand is for this, I don't know. Like,
sorry, a comment just popped up there from Mark Gillard. Even DeLorean doesn't use stainless anymore. It's true. I'm looking forward to seeing that it's next EV. DeLorean currently doesn't make a car yet, but still. So from the Tesla that's just
I have a rubbish dad joke.
Oh, go on then.
By all means.
Why is he tempering expectations when he should be tempering steel?
Hey!
Oh!
Excellent. Thoroughly approved with dad joke.
That was worth it.
So from one Tesla that it's a coming and it's going to be interesting. On said call, the next Tesla was sort of hinted at. So the next gen EV will be much more conventional. It's not meant to fill you with awe and magic, he says. It's a car to get from A to B in. So next generation platform, it's going to underpin new things. A $25,000 entry level EV, the robo taxi, which, looking forward to that. High volume, low cost, smaller vehicle, much more conventional. Basically make it, stack them high, sell them, make it easy to build, basically make sexy Lego that people can go, I've got a Tesla. That whole move away from S and X and all these, it's Tesla's job, I guess, of making EVs that aspirational product, that I want a Tesla, making it the brand that everyone wants. And now it's this next generation EV, by the sounds of things, maybe possibly, is going to be an car that will
good.
Be
that's smart. It's what should be happening.
Yeah,
this is good. I like this. And like, I very rarely am like on board with the Tesla product, aside from like the supercharging network. Generally, I think their cars look ugly. I like this for two reasons. One, I'm really into, obviously, as the former owner of a 1993 Renault Twingo, any car where your knees are the crumple zone. Also, like, yes, it's small, it's low to the ground, it's aerodynamic. This is not some monstrous truck. Yes, it looks a bit like a weird pebble, but I accept that that's something that's going to happen with cars. It's a little good car.
One of my best friends has, he came up with a theory, you know, 10 years ago. He's not into cars at all. I'm showing all these pictures of cars coming out. It's like, eventually every car's going to look like an egg, isn't it? Because it's, you just go for the aero, so it's egg car. So yeah, it might look like a weird pebble, but that's fine.
Apparently in this rendering, it's Cybertruck vibes. Please don't make it like that.
I really like the rendering. I really do. I like that thin light bar.
The snub nose is quite Cybertruck, like that that compressed front. But I also like that because there is no reason to have a big front end on an EV.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I just don't like this matchup.
It's this kind of like Cybertruck, like EQS Corolla thing. I'm optimistic the final product will look better, but like, yeah, like to what Hazel said, like I think this is where they should be going. This is still the next great frontier in EVs, is making these things like not just affordable but like cheap, and they're probably gonna get there first. People are sick of how expensive new cars are. They're sick of, you know, financing these things for 8 years that cost 50-60 grand, and if they can make a high range EV that's just a great little, you know, get around car with decent range, and it's under 30k, it's gonna do awesome, you know?
Say about 199 miles from a 44 kilowatt hour battery with that doesn't need to do 1,000 miles an hour. Citroen's already doing that.
Yeah.
They should have done this before Cybertruck.
Well, wasn't that supposed to be the Model 3, the $35,000 car that would do all the things for you?
Well, it got to 35,000 eventually. Took a few years, but got there. He didn't say when it would be $35,000. I don't think
he just said it's a thing that would exist. So yeah, I think pretty it's cool. Yeah, what's that quote again? It will be cool. It will be cool, but it's utilitarian. It's not meant to fit you with all magic. It's to get from A to B. Still beautiful, but utilitarian. I guess, like, you know, they're in proper industrial design, which looks sort of beautiful in its starkness. No, I dig it. I hope it actually happens, and I hope it happens the way that they say it's going to happen. Because yeah, it's a cool idea, and it would make, I mean, it would just print them money, and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money. Speaking of printing money, here are the cheapest states to buy a Tesla Model Y. So with various state subsidies, you can, in theory, get a Model Y as low as $31,490 in Colorado, if my US state abbreviations are correct.
You nailed it.
Thank you very much. The one I couldn't remember. What's ME?
Maine.
Thank you. Maine, England, right?
Yeah, okay. That took me a second too. So
yeah,
like,
right.
Know, assist from Lacey there.
And MA, Massachusetts. You got that one. Yeah. All right, cool. Got that one. Anyway, and it goes going all the way up to 35,990. If I've read the map right, in New York, NY. I know that one because I've been there. It's great. So good. They named it twice. But that's with hefty state subsidies. So, you know, there's $7,500 federal tax credit. And there are other bits you can get off of them in various places. So what do we think? What's the reaction to this? Do you think it's going to boost a load of sales, or do you think people are done with a Model Y?
I don't think people are going to move to Colorado for this.
I think, like, I love Colorado. Like, not only are they putting out amazing incentives for people to get into EVs, but also, like, not just cars, like, they have great e-bike incentives too. So they're really like all in on electrification, which is so awesome. And to be fair, like, yeah, you might not like these types of programs where people are getting basically like subsidized to get into EVs, but you know what? So many of these industries get subsididized. So why not us?
I'm pro subsidies.
Yeah.
Sorry, Patrick.
No, I was just gonna say, it's like, yeah, I am too. It's like, I think you have to think of this as a public good in some ways. Like, this is taking gas cars off the road. It's taking emissions out of the air. Like, that is what we should be subsidizing, you know?
Not only Tesla that has some great incentives right now, Ford was putting out some insane incentives on the Lightning and on the Mustang Mach-E, where they were giving like a type of like cashback type of incentive on top of the $7,500 credit. And that's not even including the state incentives as well. So right now is an amazing time to buy an electric car if you can swing it.
So a big thanks to Mark Shalard in the comments. That's okay, Alex. Most Americans can't say the name of English cities. I can say them. I just don't know what the abbreviation is for some of these things. However, Leicester, try saying that. It's not Leicester. One more story for the week. Lacey alluded to it earlier. The Cybertruck is coming. It's actually a thing that's really going to be here, honest, on November the 30th. So Tesla says in its Q3 report. So it's about 6 weeks' time. Pilot production of the Cybertruck at the Tesla's Gigafactory, has begun. And it says it's on track for initial deliveries this year. Initial, so says Mark Kane's story on Inside EVs, suggests that we're talking small volume rather than large, but it's a big day for Tesla because it is finally coming. Now, Lacey, if I seem to remember, you have a friend who's got, I think, 90,000 of them on order.
Yes, Ryan. Ryan's got like 50-something Cybertrucks on order. If you guys haven't heard of him on Twitter, he's pretty popular in the Tesla community, especially. It's at Kilowatts, and he's got like 50 of them because he ride shares his vehicles on Turo. So he has a fleet of Teslas already that people rent from him in the Bay Area. And he plans on having 50 of these because he thinks that people will want to use them as like a camping resource to go out to Yosemite and stuff like that from SF.
Has he been told how many of them are going to arrive on November the 30th?
Nope.
But nobody I think knows. Nobody knows. It's a mythical vehicle that it's Schrodinger's truck, except it's there. Patrick, you have a concerned look on your face.
That's just my default face. we'll see how many deliveries happen and to whom. But, you know, before I close this out, like, I did want to talk about an electric truck which you could buy literally right now, which is, Lacey, how is the Rivian treating you?
You guys, I'm so excited because I'm leaving tomorrow for a road trip. And so I'm going to be able to provide a lot of insight as far as, like, the max pack and how it performs charging-wise and distance-wise, because this is 410 miles of range is what it's rated for. I have the performance dual motor, all-wheel drive, and max pack, so it's going to be really exciting to see, but I'm loving it so far. There are just some little things that I will say, and I won't get too far into this, but there's some things I feel like I just should expect to have in a car that is, for me, I paid like $80,000 for it, and if you configure it now, it's $100,000, but I just feel like there are still some things in the software system that are missing that I'm kind of surprised by. Although Rivian has said that they are working on those updates, they just came out with that really cool update about the gauge and off-roading information, which I did get since I do have the performance dual motor. I just feel like that kind of stuff should have probably shipped with the truck, but that's just my take. But otherwise, like, it's so hard to complain about because it's so quiet. It's just so comfortable. It is lovely. I'm excited.
It's a video game day one patch that hasn't quite day one patched yet, huh?
I think we're going to see more of that in the future. It's like they're going to come out with a car, yeah, and it's like, oh, exactly. Like the downloadable content's coming later, you know?
Well, you turn your car on and then have to connect it to the Wi-Fi and then wait 2 hours.
Well, the one thing that is like really bothersome to me is that I can't do voice to text. It doesn't have the capability to do so, which is such a fundamental feature. And especially in the state of Michigan, it's illegal for you to use your phone while you're driving in a non-hands-free manner. So like,
yeah,
that sensibly, fundamentally, like, is one of the biggest like bothers to me. Like, they should prioritize that.
Yeah, can you not CarPlay? We don't have them over here, so my knowledge is limited on Rivian. So does CarPlay not do that?
So it doesn't have CarPlay and it doesn't have Android Auto. It just uses Amazon Alexa voice commands, which I found with music, using my Amazon Music account, it like works really great. It just doesn't do all of the like. Yeah, the,
so it's, this $100,000 car in 2023 that doesn't do CarPlay or Android Auto. Is it coming?
No, because it's Amazon that owns them.
They're all starting to do this. Probably... They're kicking out Apple and Amazon. It's a map. I'm sorry, Apple and Google. It's a map thing, part of it, and it's also like they don't want like some third party company to like own the tech, own data. The software, own the data. Yeah, 100%. So it's like I'm not at all shocked that that's the case. And Tesla too, which is like people have asked for CarPlay for years or Android Auto and Teslas for years, and Musk is like, no, you know.
Well, if you solve the route planning problem, that's not a big deal. And Rivian just bought ABRP, a better route planner. So, and I've noticed that I've been ABing for my road trip coming up, what that looks like, and they still need to do some updating with that because they're not really matching. And it looks like ABRP is still providing the more realistic information. But I'm really excited for that because the route planning is crucial. And if you don't have access to Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, or maybe even other third-party apps like ABRP or ChargeWay, then no problem because they can mirror right up on the screen. But at least they're solving, like getting to solving that issue. So I'd be fine without all that. It's just that freaking text message thing is really bothersome to me.
I can imagine. Right. Mark Schlard, that's the correct face, Alex. Yeah, it is. Because I don't... Apple CarPlay is how I live my life. That brings us to a very sad but sweet end to this week. I think next week, if we move away from Tesla news, we need Riffin Rivian just for Lacey to tell us about her adventures. I'm keen to learn more about the car. But for now, we're going to wrap this up. So a huge thank you to Miss Go Electric herself, Lacey, to Hazel Southwell, and to the boss man, Patrick George, in Voices in the Post. also, huge thanks to our producer, Danny Howard, behind the scenes, who has been putting all the wonderful images up on your screens. And if you want to say anything to us, do send us an email at contact@insideevs.com. For now, goodbye, and we'll see you next week. Bye. Everyone's waving, but they mean goodbye.